document some of these incredible panthers. And as we pieced the story together, it just became larger and larger in scope until today we have a feature documentary that is really the first feature documentary ever made about this incredibly elusive and cryptic animal, the Florida panther.
This is The Butterfly Effect, a podcast that shows the big impact a small action can do. Tali Orad is talking to those special people that make a difference with nature and trees.
Welcome everyone to The Butterfly Effect. My name is Tali Orad. I'm your host and your butterfly here. My special guest today is Eric Bendick. Eric is an Emmy-winning director, producer, and a writer whose films explore connectivity, conflict, and ingenuity at the intersection of human and wild spaces. He's led storytelling expeditions to the heart of many of the last intact and untamed landscapes on Earth, as well as to the front lines of habitat destructions and fragmentation. His films for National Geographic, PBS, Smithsonian, History Channel, among others, have garnered numerous awards from major film festivals around the world. Eric is a current grantee of Bradford Center and a graduate of Brown University and Montana State University. Welcome, Eric, to The Butterfly Effect.
Thank you, Tali. It's great to be here.
So first, congratulations on your latest film, The Path of the Panther, which is a National Geographic documentary telling the story of the Florida panther and the land it needs to survive.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the film?
Sure, I would love to. So this film began in earnest, really in 2017. So it's taken about 5 or 6 years to make.
Wow.
And it launched off of an idea that was kind of a moonshot, trying to film and photograph the Florida panther, which is one of the most elusive mammals on Earth. At one point, there were as few as 20
Wow.
panthers living in the Florida Everglades, and they are the last surviving puma east of the Mississippi. And the reason that they are the last surviving puma east of the Mississippi River is that they're so elusive. They're incredibly cryptic. They're sort of a ghost of the Everglades. And they really, even some of the biologists that research them and study them have never seen one. So they are kind of like this this incredible mystery that still lives in the Everglades. And we wanted to understand not only their behavior, but get a kind of an inside look into their life when we're not around. So we set out to film and photograph them starting in 2017. And lo and behold, we were able to actually document some of these incredible panthers. And as we pieced the story together, it just became larger and larger in scope until today we have a feature documentary that is really the first feature documentary ever made about this incredibly elusive and cryptic animal, the Florida panther.
Wow, so I watched it, and it was just, first I must say to everybody, you have to watch it. It's incredible. But I saw many panthers, so you say that.
Yeah.
And it's also, I noticed you told the story through the photographer, which is Carlton Ward Jr., right? And the work that he was doing and also telling the story. And you were talking, you mentioned now the Everglades, and one of the things you mentioned is how there is more, the Everglades are more flooded now, so they have less habitat, which for somebody, I was at the Everglades, right? And people that think of the Everglades, they think, well, it needs to be like that. So what's the problem? So I'm just curious on what you're taking.
Yeah, it's very fascinating. So if you think back to when the panther was basically hunted and, you know, kind of persecuted out of the entire eastern United States, there was this pocket of wilderness down in South Florida known as the Everglades. And this was even, you know, before there was a national park. There was this wild place that humans really could not conquer. And so the cats held on in that wild place. And over time, what's been super fascinating is that kind of their last stronghold in the Everglades is changing. We're seeing a lot of change in that ecosystem. And so basically this area that kept the species alive is now having to deal with stronger hurricanes. It's having to deal with lots of development all around the periphery of the Everglades. So then when, you know, a suburban neighborhood floods with water from a big tropical storm, they pump the water out into the Everglades, and then that raises the water table. And while that may be okay for a lot of Everglades species, it's not great news for a panther that needs dry land and needs to find deer and other prey items that also need dry land. So what we discovered is that because of these changes, and a lot of these changes are on tribal lands, indigenous lands, and are being kind of reported on there, we're seeing less and less habitat in the Everglades proper for the panther. And that causes a real question to come up, because if this is our last stronghold for this cat and it's disappearing, where's it gonna go?
Right. One thing that I wanted to ask you is, some may say why the panthers are so important. And this is basically talking about preserving ecosystem and biodiversity. And the panther is not the only one that is at risk in terms of the world. And we know of hundreds of animals that are extinct. And I know there was a mention on that in the film. And I would love for you to talk about that.
The panther is super compelling for a number of reasons, and one of the most important and one of the most key to us learning from the species, what it can teach us, is that these cats, they need a big range. They need a lot of land kind of pieced together to support their home ranges. So if you have one cat, it basically has a range up to 200 square miles, which is very, very large. And so if you think about what that cat needs and the landscape that it holds together, it is actually, if you protect that home range for that one cat, it's actually protecting hundreds, if not thousands, of other species of animals. It's an umbrella species. It's protecting in its range an entire ecosystem, and that's filled with plants, that's filled with animals, that's filled with fresh water, clean air, all these things that we need even as humans for a healthy ecosystem. So that's kind of why they're so key and vital for our planet. And then there's one other piece to the story, which is that as they move around, so you take one of these ranges and then you add the nearby panther or the panther population to the north, they make these pathways. So they're moving all across the landscape in ways that connect the landscape. And if you think about that idea, there's basically a pathway that is the last opportunity in Florida to protect a wildlife corridor running through the state. And so then the panther really, and pumas in general, can be this kind of secret way to stitch together the landscape and to make the landscape healthy and whole and connected. And that is really important.
Yes. So you mentioned wildlife corridors, which are super important to connect lands for whether it's the puma, right, the panther, or actually any mm-hmm. other animal. You drive across any state now and there's tons of signs of be careful of deer's crossing, right, or anything mm-hmm. else.
You know, I think what we're starting to see momentum on with this idea and with now the kind of the emblem of these corridors being the panther, we have an opportunity to look and learn from the animal itself about a bigger way to connect landscapes all across a country, a continent, you know, the globe, and looking at that connectivity as something that is vital for healthy lands and waters. And even with issues like climate that are coming in and disrupting typical migrations and changing the timing of those migrations, and also, you know, you have species that need to be farther north than they used to be, mm-hmm. they need that movement. So this is one of those opportunities, and it really is a hopeful opportunity to take those lessons to heart.
So what can people do?
You know, I think there are some really fascinating lessons within the story of the panther. First, they should watch the film, if nothing else, because it's pretty entertaining, and there's some really incredible footage of these big cats. But also to get kind of a sense around what this story is all about, why these corridors are important, how they work, and also to see, you know, this is a turning point where this idea is gaining traction, and there's no reason that the idea can't spread. That's really the goal, mm-hmm. is for, you know, people in their backyard or in their states to come up with the plan for their corridors, to have a corridor that spreads through New England or eventually spreads through the East Coast or the West Coast. You know, mm-hmm. we need individuals to look at their state and then also to talk to both scientists and legislators within those states and those territories to say, well, why don't we have a corridor? Or wouldn't that be useful for our future to map this out?
Right.
And slowly, I think those pieces can fall into place. And I think it's going to take local people and local action to make it happen.
Yeah. I'm curious, what surprised you when you did the film?
Well, it did surprise us that we were seeing panthers. We started, you know, with a couple of images. They were very grainy, and it was kind of like the backside of a few cats running away from us. And so we started not knowing if we would ever really capture, you know, beautiful shots of panthers, like leaping over logs and swimming through water and doing all the crazy things that they do.
Yeah.
So it did surprise us that we would have the cats so beautifully portrayed, and obviously that was a really pleasant surprise. One of the other things that was surprising was just how many different animals we encountered in the same places. Mm-hmm. So there's a moment in the film where you see otters, you see a sandhill crane, you see deer, you see turkeys, you see wild hogs, like everything coming down this trail. And then you realize it's not just the panther. There's a whole world out here that we don't typically get to see.
Yeah, and the whole ecosystem. And once humans are not there or interfering, then they can roam around. That's pretty cool.
Right.
You mentioned that you started the film in 2017, and I know Hurricane Irma was hitting while you were filming, and I'm just curious how it affected, obviously, the filming and also the Panthers.
Yeah, no, it was a fascinating twist in the story. Hurricane Irma really revved up out of the Gulf, and at the time we were really in the peak of our wet season camera trap work. So we had cameras deployed all over the Everglades, and as it got closer and closer and we were looking at its path, we realized it was going to run over all of the panther habitat. Yeah. So not only did that present a danger to, you know, our cameras and a lot of the work we had done to prepare, but it also presented a question: how would the panther survive? How would this animal react to being flooded and all of the wind and the rain and everything else? And what we discovered, which was pretty cool, is that the panthers are way tougher than our cameras, because our cameras were absolutely kind of obliterated. They were just one after another got flooded or hit by trees and all sorts of chaos there. But the panthers, they really came back and they really did survive, and they really are resilient in that landscape. And really incredible that some of the panthers we were following, including, you know, some of our stars, a few months later, they came back to some of the same territories and they were using the same habitat and they know how to survive, which is very cool.
Yeah, that is cool. Now, for those who do not know, Irma was category five, and it was like widespread destruction across its path. I mean, that was...
Yeah.
Yeah, that was intense. So how many cameras were destroyed?
I think there were 7 systems in total. I think we had... Yeah, about 9 out there. So it was quite a big reset after that. But we did get some pretty compelling film, footage during the storm of the swamp rising, the waters rising and kind of overtaking the camera. And then actually a few really cool images of cats moving around right before the storm too. So it was actually very cool.
That is cool. Were there other challenges that you faced in that environment?
So we had a lot of twists and turns in the story, and we were really trying to hang on as the story changed and evolved in front of us. So one big challenge that was challenged both for the panthers and for us was that late into the project, we had a few cats on our cameras showing up with a rare disease. Mm-hmm. And that disease was affecting their nervous system. And so they were staggering around and, unable to walk properly. And so the news around Florida exploded, and there was lots of coverage of this, and it was coming right out of the trail camera observations. So we knew we had to share this story. And so we did have a way to do that. And we are still tracking the story because it's still unfolding. And the disease is, there's a lot of things that have been ruled out, but the disease is actually still out there affecting cats.
And we don't know why.
Right. We don't have a silver bullet yet for why.
Yeah. Were you able to find other things that were helping scientists not related to the panthers?
There was a question related to the hurricanes about how the cats would move and where they would move and what they were up to during the storms. Mm-hmm. And so some of our cameras were able to help figure out how these cats were responding, if they were responding in advance. And what we did find is that before the storm, there were a lot of animals on the move, almost as if they kind of knew the storm was coming. And then it took a while afterwards for things to actually get back to normal. So that was interesting for science. And then really the biggest piece of our work that intersected with the work of the researchers and the scientists was following this new female panther. Her name was Babs, and she moved north from the southern Everglades into the northern Everglades, and she was the first female panther in nearly 50 years to move into that new home range. What that represented really for big cat conservation was an expanding breeding range, mm-hmm. which for big cats all over the world is a very rare thing these days, right. to have an expanding breeding range. So Babs was just seen as this kind of rock star pioneer who was really showing scientists that it's not too late. It's not too late to lose hope, because females like this can make this journey, and they can show scientists that there is a path to reconnecting a lot of this landscape.
Yeah, and she showed the value of those corridors for us. Now it's more than we need to continue and not just stay in that path. So that's awesome. I love that.
Right.
What did you wish you knew before approaching this film?
I don't think we had a good sense of how long this project would take to finish, both because we came in not really knowing that we were making a feature film or a feature documentary, but also we didn't know that the story would grow and evolve and all the twists and turns would come in as much as they did. And so that's something you know, as a filmmaker, you never know. And it is kind of humbling at the time, because you think, okay, here's a project, here's a couple years of investment, and then 5 years later you're actually getting towards the finish line and thinking, wow, this was just a huge project in scope and way bigger than we would have guessed. And yeah. I wouldn't have had it any other way, but it was a complicated journey to get through the story and through all, you know, years and years of production. So
the story was filmed for 5 years, or production was done for 5 years?
We actually filmed the last content shortly before our premiere, and that was 5 years.
Wow.
That was actually 5 years from the start. So there was actually new content flowing in right up until the end.
Wow. So what would you tell your, you know, if you can go back in time, what advice will you give yourself pre-screening?
I think I would say just, you know, go with it, go with the flow, because you really are not going to have a lot of choice. You're just going to have to embrace that creative process and embrace the bit of the uncertainty, the unknown, and, you know, just take it in, because it is a privilege and a special opportunity to tell this story and to really be among the first to tell this story in the way that we have.
Yeah. So you have 5 years of footage. How do you even, I don't know, go over it and decide which one is relevant and edit? I don't know. I'm not a filmmaker.
Yeah, it really was scene by scene. So a lot of scenes were pieced together into kind of an assembly edit, rough cut edit. And that was hours and hours long. So you had something in this initial kind of draft phase that was 3, 4, 5 hours. And your job at that point is to really look at the story and see what you can't live without, mm-hmm. and what's going to tell the cleanest and most compelling story all the way through. And so obviously a lot of those scenes are gone, the ones that weren't essential to the story, but that's a tough process.
Yeah. So how do you feel about the impact this documentary has had and can continue to have on the public?
Yeah, the impact has been fantastic. We have been after our theatrical, we actually did an impact tour through the state of Florida, which included screenings in over 50 theatrical venues. So it was a true theatrical run in the state. And in the process, the film actually became the number one grossing documentary in the entire country. So
Congratulations.
thousands of people, thank you. Thousands and thousands of people came out to see the film in theaters on the big screen. And I think that is a just, you can't even quantify the impact that's made for people to sit down and process the story. And then from here, there's a whole nother opportunity because the film is about to launch on Disney Plus, and so it will be streaming available on that huge platform. So the impact is really just getting started, we hope. And we think the story can really move people of all ages throughout the whole country. And I think that piece of the impact is just coming together.
So, what do you want people to take away from the film?
I think people should take away from the film that there's a lot of hope, that it is not all doom and gloom, and that we have a window. And I say we have a window because I think that window is changing and shrinking. We don't have that long to figure out how to map out a corridor system that could potentially be in every state, maybe in every community that could be serving both people and wildlife. And I think if people can take that away and become, sort of embody the spirit of the panther, which is to defend a territory and not just defend it, but protect all of the ecosystem underneath it. I think that's what people can embrace and really to dig in and do that work, almost the way the panther is doing it in its native environment.
So those corridors can be with trees and can be without trees, right? It depends on the area, and if we want to do it globally, there's some that,
Absolutely.
right, doesn't have to have trees. The panthers will have trees, but I'm curious, what is your favorite tree?
My favorite tree is the cypress tree, the bald cypress tree. And it's you actually see quite a few of them in the film, in Path of the Panther. And it is really an incredible vision when you see these trees, especially the old ones. They're pretty weathered and very strong and stout, and they actually get huge. And there was one recently that was discovered in the southeast that was 2,600 years old.
Oh, wow.
So they're, yeah, they can be ancient trees, and there's still tons of cool mysteries around them. They have these wild cypress knees that protrude from the water, and we still don't know what those cypress knees really do for the tree. And so there's still all this kind of mystery and unknown about them. And then they have this just beautiful canopy. A lot of times there's birds living in the canopy, orchids living in the canopy, and then all kinds of cool Spanish moss hanging from them. So yeah, they've got it all. They're like a world unto themselves.
A super tree.
Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you
Yeah.
so much, Eric, for sharing the behind the scenes and for bringing this important topic to the global stage. And
Thank you,
I,
Tali.
of course, and I encourage anyone to go watch The Path of the Panther. It's National Geographic, and now you say Disney Plus, right?
Yes.
Perfect.
Nat Geo, Disney Plus, and we'll be streaming there. And then feel free to connect with us at pathofthepanther.com.
And thank you everyone for joining me today. We are all beautiful butterflies, each in his and her individual ways. I wanted to thank you for joining me today in this episode. I really appreciate you coming on this journey with me, and I hope you can join me next time. And remember, It only takes a small action to make a big difference. Be a butterfly.
And that's all for this episode. Thank you for joining us today. Please subscribe to hear more of our stories of change.